Welcome to The Mildly Interesting with Oliver Wilson, the official bedtime podcast of former insomniacs. Tomorrow is Monday, November 29th, Square Dancing Day. Square Dancing Day exists to celebrate the square dance form of folk dancing, and is a great excuse to get out and do-si-do. This fun, healthy and straightforward dance with a long history deserves a holiday all of its own, thankfully now has one. Square dancing has its roots in traditional English, Irish and Scottish folk dance. Square dancing is the official dance of 19 American states and is still very popular in Europe. You may have done the do-si-do, but have you ever wondered about the history of square dancing? Well, I have. And I think you might just find it mildly interesting. Subscribe to The Mildly Interesting on Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are available. We'll be right back. A square dance is for four couples, eight dancers in total, arranged in a square, with one couple on each side, facing the middle of the square. Square dances contained elements from numerous traditional dances and were first documented in 16th century England, but they were also quite common in France and throughout Europe. Early square dances, mainly English country dances and French quadrilles, traveled to North America with the European settlers and developed significantly there. In some countries and regions, through preservation and repetition, square dances have attained the status of folk dance. Square dancing is strongly associated with the United States due to its association with the romanticized image of the American cowboy in the 20th century, and 31 states have designated it as their official state dance. The leading North American types of square dances include traditional square dance and modern Western square dance, which is widely known and danced worldwide. Other leading types popular in England, Ireland, and Scotland include Playford dances, regional folk dances, Sealy, Irish set dances, and Scottish country dances. The couples in a square are numbered, although numbering varies among different types. In many types, two of the couples are known as heads, and the other two are called sides. In most American forms of square dance, the dancers are prompted or cued through a sequence of steps by a caller to the beat, and, in some traditions, the phrasing, of music. In other variations, dancers have no caller and instead memorize and perform a specific routine and sequence of steps. Square dance music varies widely, with some forms using traditional tunes and others employing more modern types. Dances can be organized by square dance clubs, bands, individuals, or similar organizations. Attire varies by type, with some forms possessing a specific dress code and others having no requirements. The standard square formation can also vary at times to include more or fewer dancers or arrange dancers in a different shape. Square dances were first documented in 16th century England, although their origins can be traced further back to steps and figures used in traditional folk dances and social dances from many countries. One of the earliest influences was the Morris dance, an English dance for six men involving a line formation and energetic steps. This dance is closely related to another ancestor of square dancing, English country dance, which included a variety of dances for groups of couples arranged in circles, lines, or squares. In 1651, John Playford published 105 of these dances in the English Dancing Master, eight square dances exhibiting concepts still in use, such as the head couples performing an action and the side couples repeating it. Three of the dances, such as Dulce John, specifically use the term square dance in the phrase, a square dance for eight thus. In the early 1800s, English country dances merged with French dances to form the quadrille for four couples in a square. These dances further evolved in America, where they arrived with European settlers. After the American Revolution, the quadrille became especially popular. Quadrilles were originally danced from memorized steps and sequences, but as African American slaves played music for the dances, they began calling out the steps. This practice became common by the early 1900s and gave rise to the modern caller. Between 1940 and 1960, the modern Western square dance evolved from the Western style of traditional square dance formed in the United States. Traditional Western square dancing was promoted beginning in the 1930s by Lloyd Shaw, who solicited definitions from callers across the country to preserve the dance form and make it available to other teachers. The American folk music revival in New York City in the 1950s was rooted in the resurgent interest in square dancing and folk dancing there in the 1940s, which gave musicians such as Pete Seeger widespread exposure. Square dances are considered folk dances in many countries and regions, although the term square dance varies. In the United States, which is strongly associated with square dancing through the romanticized images of American cowboys, the term is used for dances in square formations and refers to the dance events where square dances are performed. The term is used less frequently in England, Ireland, and Scotland, and many dance events involve dances in the square, circle, and line formations. The term has also become associated with barn dances, where many different formations of dance are used. Also called old-time square dance or quadrilles by some older New England callers in recognition of the dance it descended from, traditional square dance is not standardized and can be subdivided into three main regional styles: Northeast New England, Southeast Appalachian, and Western. The New England and Appalachian styles have been exceptionally well documented in the early US and have survived to the 21st century. There are several other styles, some of which have survived or been revived while others have not. Where traditional square dance has been revived, it encompasses a wide range of new choreography. Traditional square dance structure varies by region, but it usually consists of a limited number of calls occurring in a set order. Traditional square dance is frequently presented in alternation with contra dances, particularly in revival groups, or with some freestyle couple dancing at surviving local events. Modern Western square dance, also called Western square dance, contemporary Western square dance, or modern American square dance, evolved from the Western style of traditional square dance. Since the 1970s, modern Western square dance has been promoted and standardized by CallerLab, the International Association of Square Dance Callers. The initial stage reached by all dancers is called mainstream. This program consists of a core list of about 70 moves which is revised periodically. Modern Western square dance is sometimes presented in alternation with round dances. This modern form of square dancing is taught in around 30 countries, including the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, Australia, Belgium, France, Germany, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Finland, Switzerland, the Netherlands, Australia, China, Japan, and Russia. Within Europe, the majority of square dance clubs are in Germany and the United Kingdom. All teach the CallerLab syllabus, but there is slight style and call title variations throughout the world. Because of this standardization, anyone with the proper training can dance modern Western square dancing in many countries worldwide. Instruction is typically given in the local language, but the calls are always in English, allowing people to dance internationally once they learn the calls. Also called English country dances, Playford style dances originated from the dances published in John Playford's book The English Dancing Master. Some of the square dances listed in the book, such as Newcastle, have survived the 21st century, and countless new dances have been written in the Playford style. These dances include a range of moves, from smooth, gentle steps to more energetic leaps. They are supported by the English Folk Dance and Song Society. Many traditional English regional folk dances are square dances that have survived into the 21st century. For instance, in Goathland Square 8 and Cumberland Square 8, which originated from different English villages, dancers perform a series of memorized moves in a square formation. Many of these dances are danced at folk or barn dances, along with other types of square dances, including Playford dances, dances derived from the quadrille, such as La Rousse published by H.D. Willock in the Manual of Dancing, 1847, American traditional square dances, and countless new square dances written in the 20th and 21st centuries. Irish Seelie dances cover a wide range of formations, including many square dances. They are often performed at traditional Irish and Scottish social gatherings called ceilidhs. Ceilidhs are also held in England, where the same squares may be done at folk dances or barn dances but with more stepping, including skip steps, hop steps, polka steps, and rants. Irish set dance is a square dance with strong regional associations. The dance involves stepping, often with a flat foot polka step. Unlike traditional and modern Western square dancing, where couples are designated as heads or sides, couples in Irish set dances are either tops or sides. Scottish country dances cover a wide range of formations, including many square dances. These dances, standardized by the Royal Scottish Country Dance Society, involve specific steps and formations that are performed in different sequences for different dances. Many traditions have square dances. They are usually not called, relatively, the sequence of figures is fixed and known by the dancers. Examples include the German Beckerdorfer, French Carré de Campagne, and Mikatoum from the Low Countries. Variations include double squares, with two couples on each side, like the Danish Sønderborger Doppelquadrille or the Dutch Vleugelt. Some are composed of multiple figures, indicating descent from the high society quadrille. The four couples arranged in a square are called a set, and each couple is numbered. Couple numbering in a square dance set usually begins with the couple nearest the head of the hall, the side of the room containing the musicians and caller, or, in the pre-caller era, the royal presence or other hosts or essential guests. This couple is the first or number one couple. If most figures are danced around the set, with one or more couples visiting the others in turn, the couples are likewise numbered around the set. In most surviving American square dance traditions, the couples are numbered counterclockwise. The second couple is to the first couple's right, the third couple is across from the first, and the fourth couple is to the left. The first and third are head couples or heads, or, in older parlance, the first four, the second and fourth side couples or sides, formerly side four or second four. If most of the figures are danced between facing couples across the set, as in the 19th century quadrille and dances derived from it, The couple opposite the first is the second couple. The first and second couples constitute the head or top couples, or the head and foot couples. The third and fourth couples are the side couples. In Irish set dances, the third couple, sometimes termed the first side couple, is to the left of the first top couple. The couples facing the first top and first side are the second top couple and the second side couple, respectively. Square dance movements are known as calls, and some forms of the dance, such as traditional and modern Western square dancing, use a caller to direct the dancers through different calls. In some forms of traditional square dancing, the caller may be one of the dancers or musicians, but in modern Western square dancing, the caller is on stage, giving full attention to directing the dancers. A square dance call may take a concise time or a very long time to execute. Most calls require between 4 and 32 counts, where a count is roughly one step. In traditional square dancing, the timing of a call is dictated by tradition. In some regional styles, particularly that of New England, the dance movements are closely fitted to the phrases of the music. Many calls have been given formally specified durations in modern Western square dancing, based partly on direct observation of how long it takes an average dancer to execute them. Traditional and modern Western square dance differ in the number of calls and their levels of standardization. Traditional square dance uses between 10 and 30 calls, depending on the region and the individual caller. Many traditional square dance calls are similar or identical to contradance calls, and the caller explains new dance moves. In modern Western square dance, the participants learn and become proficient in a defined set of calls known as a program. The mainstream program, the default level of achievement, consists of close to 70 primary and mainstream calls. Rather than learning a complete routine, modern Western square dancers learn basic movements and calls but do not know what order they will be called. Unlike traditional square dance, two modern Western dances are rarely alike. Most modern Western square dancers participate only in the programs they have thoroughly learned. Caller Lab, the Callers International Association, sets all programs and governs the training of callers. Traditional and modern Western square dancing have several calls in common, but there are usually slight differences in how they are performed. For example, the Alamanda left is traditionally performed by grasping left hands with the other dancer, pulling away slightly, and walking halfway around a central axis, then stepping through. In modern Western square dance, the grip is modified so that each dancer grips the forearm of the other, and there is no pulling, that is, each dancer supports his or her own weight. These modifications make it easier to enter and exit the movement and thus incorporate it into a long sequence of calls. In many communities, including Scotland and Ireland, and continental Europe, the dancers know the complete dance, and there is no caller. Square dance music varies widely by type of dance. Traditional square dance is primarily danced to live music. Since the 19th century, much of the square dance repertoire has been derived from jigs and reels from Scotland and Ireland, in relatively unaltered form, sometimes as played in the old-time music tradition or as adapted by other cultures that of Quebec. This sort of music is played on acoustic instruments, such as the fiddle, banjo, guitar, and double bass, specific instruments, including the piano, accordion, concertina, and hammered dulcimer, are popular in specific regions. In some communities where square dancing has survived, the prevailing form of music has become popular songs from the 1930s, 1940s, and 1950s played on saxophones, drums, and electric guitars. Depending on the regional style, tempos can vary from around 108 to more than 150 beats per minute. Modern Western square dances dance to various music types, including pop, traditional and contemporary country music, songs from Broadway musicals, rock, Motown, techno, and hip-hop. The music is usually played from recordings, and the tempo is more uniform than in traditional square dancing, ranging from 120 to 128 beats per minute. At this speed, dancers take one step per beat of the music. Irish and Scottish dances are generally done to traditional tunes. English dances may be done to traditional tunes, though there is experimentation with many musical styles, especially at Cayley's. Square dance events can be run in different ways. In North America, traditional square dances are organized by bands, callers, or tiny dancers. Modern Western square dances are arranged by square dance clubs. The clubs offer classes, socials, and dance evenings and arrange more significant dances usually open to non-club members. In Britain, square dance clubs are affiliated with the British Association of American Square Dance Clubs, which also translates modern Western square dance teaching to caller lab definitions. Most square dance events in Britain are run according to the caller lab syllabus by a caller who is either a member of caller lab or of the Square Dance Callers Club of Great Britain, and the level of dancing is indicated on the publicity material, as in mainstream or mainstream with pre-announced plus. Cayley and barn dance events are also often advertised as being square dance events. Square dance attire varies by type of dance and by region. Traditional square dance groups often have no particular dress code. In the United States, more significant modern Western square dance events sometimes request a strict Western-style dress code, which originated in the late 1950s and early 1960s and is known as traditional square dance attire, although it was not traditional before that time. Some clubs require a less strict dress code, known as proper or no dress code, called casual. Although many modern Western square dancers in Britain wear traditional square dance attire, events often have a relaxed dress code. Where traditional square dancing exists as a community social dance, sometimes in the form of a barn dance or a Cayley, people often dress up, though their clothing is not square dance specific. In the United States, lines between the forms of square dancing have become blurred. Traditional revival groups typically adopt the very casual dress, and traditional revival choreographers have begun to use basic movements invented for modern Western square dance forms. A few modern Western callers incorporate older dances from various traditions, such as New England or Appalachian, into their programs. While the standard formation for a square dance is four couples, there are many variations on the theme. These include 9 pins, a square with one extra person in the middle. Winter solstice, a square with one extra couple in the middle. Hexitation, a square with two couples in each of the head positions. 12 reel, a square with three people on each side, usually a man with a woman on either side of him. Hexagon dancing, six couples arranged in a hexagon. There are three head couples and three side couples. This variation is most commonly done by advanced and challenge level dancers. Viggen, a square with four people who each dances their own part and that of their opposite. This variation is almost exclusively done by challenge level dancers due to its difficulty. Modern choreography also includes dances that morph from one form to another. There are contradances and four-couple longways sets, which turn into a square dance part of the way through the dance and then back to the original formation. Grid squares are dances where the squares are arranged in a grid, with sets carefully aligned across the room and up and down the room. The calls move dancers from one square to another in intricate patterns. When we return, the banjo? The banjo is a stringed instrument with a thin membrane stretched over a frame or cavity to form a resonator. The membrane is typically circular and usually made of plastic or, occasionally, animal skin. Early forms of the instrument were fashioned by African Americans in the United States. The banjo is frequently associated with folk and country music and has also been used in rock, pop, and hip-hop. Several rock bands, such as the Eagles, Led Zeppelin, and the Allman Brothers, have used the five-string banjo in some of their songs. Historically, the banjo occupied a central place in Black American traditional music and the folk culture of rural whites before entering the mainstream via the minstrel shows of the 19th century. Along with the fiddle, the banjo is a mainstay of American styles of music, such as bluegrass and old-time music. It is also very frequently used in traditional, trad, jazz. Banjo is also a standard instrument for Caribbean genres like begin, calypso, and mento. The modern banjo derives from instruments thought to have been in use in the Caribbean since the 17th century by enslaved people taken from West Africa. Written references to the banjo in North America appeared in the 18th century, and the instrument became increasingly available commercially from around the second quarter of the 19th century. Since many enslaved people of South America were brought there by the Portuguese, they might have brought the idea of the instrument with them. Several claims as to the etymology of the name banjo have been made. It may derive from the Kimbundu word mbanza. The Oxford English Dictionary states that it comes from a dialectal pronunciation of Portuguese bandor or an early anglicization of Spanish banderia. Various instruments in Africa, chief among them the kora, feature a skin head and gourd, or similar shell, body. The African instruments differ from early African American banjos in that the necks do not possess a Western-style fingerboard and tuning pegs, instead of having stick necks, with strings attached to the neck with loops for tuning. Banjos with fingerboards and tuning pegs are known from the Caribbean as early as the 17th century. Some 18th and early 19th century writers transcribed the name of these instruments variously as bangi, banza, bonjour, bonya, and banjar. Instruments similar to the banjo, for example, the Chinese sanction, the Japanese shamisen, Persian tar, and Moroccan sintra, have been played in many countries. Another likely relative of the banjo is the akonting, a spike folk lute played by the Jola tribe of Senegambia, and the Ubor Akwala of the Igbo. Similar instruments include the Zalem of Senegal and the Ngoni of the Wasulu region, including parts of Mali, Guinea, and Ivory Coast, and a more significant variation of the Ngoni known as the Djimbri developed in Morocco by black sub-Saharan Africans, Norwa or Haratin. Early African-influenced banjos were built around a gourd body and a wooden stick neck. These instruments had varying numbers of strings, though often including some form of a drone. The earliest known picture of an enslaved person playing a banjo-like instrument, the Old Plantation, shows a four-string instrument with its fourth, thumb, string shorter than the others. Many enslaved Africans played the banjo in the antebellum South, spreading it to the rest of the population. In his memoir With Saber and Scalpel, the autobiography of a soldier and surgeon, the Confederate veteran and surgeon John Allen Wyeth recalls learning to play the banjo as a child from an enslaved person on his family plantation. Another man who learned to play from African Americans, probably in the 1820s, was Joel Walker Sweeney, a minstrel performer from Appomattox Courthouse, Virginia. Sweeney has been credited with adding a string to the four-string African-American banjo, and popularizing the five-string banjo. Although Robert McAlpin Williamson is the first documented white banjoist, in the 1830s, Sweeney became the first white performer to play the banjo on stage. Sweeney's musical performances occurred at the beginning of the minstrel era, as banjos shifted from being exclusively homemade folk instruments to instruments of a more modern style. Sweeney participated in this transition by encouraging drum maker William Boucher of Baltimore to make banjos commercially for him to sell. According to Arthur Woodward, in 1949, Sweeney replaced the gourd with a sound box made of wood and covered with skin, and added a short fifth string about 1831. However, modern scholar Gene Blustein pointed out in 1964 that Sweeney may not have originated either the fifth string or sound box. This new banjo was at first tuned D'GDF sharp A, though by the 1890s, this had been transposed up to GCGBD. Banjos were introduced in Britain by Sweeney's group, the American Virginia Minstrels, in the 1840s and became very popular in music halls. The instrument grew in popularity during the 1840s after Sweeney began his traveling minstrel show. By the end of the 1840s, the instrument had expanded from Caribbean possession to take root in America and across the Atlantic in England. It was estimated in 1866 that there were probably 10,000 banjos in New York City, up from only a handful in 1844. People were exposed to banjos at minstrel shows and at medicine shows, Wild West shows, variety shows, and traveling vaudeville shows. The banjo's popularity was also boosted by the Civil War, as servicemen on both sides in the Army or Navy were exposed to the banjo played in minstrel shows and by other servicemen. A popular movement of aspiring banjoists began as early as 1861. The enthusiasm for the instrument was labeled a banjo craze or banjo mania. By the 1850s, aspiring banjo players had options to help them learn their instrument. There were more teachers teaching banjo basics in the 1850s than there had been in the 1840s. There were also instruction manuals and printed music in the manuals for those who could read them. The first book of notated music was The Complete Preceptor by Elias Howe, published under the pseudonym Gumbo Chaff, consisting mainly of Christie's minstrel's tunes. The first banjo method was the Briggs Banjo Instructor, 1855, by Tom Briggs. Other methods included Howe's New American Banjo School, 1857, and Phil Rice's Method for the Banjo, with or without a master, 1858. These books taught the stroke style or banjo style, similar to modern frailing or clawhammer styles. By 1868, music for the banjo was available printed in a magazine when J.K. Buckley wrote and arranged popular music for Buckley's Monthly Banjoist. Frank Beaconverse also published his entire collection of compositions in The Complete Banjoist in 1868, which included polkas, waltzes, marches, and clog hornpipes. Opportunities to work include the minstrel companies and circuses present in the 1840s, floating theaters and variety theaters, forerunners of the variety show, and vaudeville. The term classic banjo is used today to talk about a bare finger guitar style widely used among banjo players of the late 19th to early 20th century. It is still used by banjoists today. The term also differentiates that style of playing from the fingerpicking bluegrass banjo styles, such as the Scruggs and Keith styles. The Briggs banjo method, considered to be the first banjo method and which taught the stroke style of playing, also mentioned another way of playing, the guitar style. Alternatively known as finger style, the new way of playing the banjo displaced the stroke method until by 1870, it was the dominant style. Although mentioned by Briggs, it wasn't taught. The first banjo method to teach the technique was Frank P. Converse's New and Complete Method for the Banjo with or Without a Master, published in 1865. Players use the thumb and two or three fingers on their right hand to play in guitar style to pick the notes. Samuel Swaim Stewart summarized the style in 1888, saying, "In the guitar style of banjo playing, the little finger of the right hand is rested upon the head near the bridge, and serves as a rest to the hand and a resistance to the movement of picking the strings. In the beginning, it is best to acquire a knowledge of picking the strings with the use of the first and second fingers and thumb only, allowing the third finger to remain idle until the other fingers have become thoroughly accustomed to their work. The three fingers are almost invariably used in playing chords and accompaniments to songs." The banjo, although popular, carried low-class associations from its role in blackface minstrel shows, medicine shows, tent shows, and variety shows or vaudeville. There was a push in the 19th century banjo to bring the instrument into respectability. Musicians such as William A. Huntley made an effort to elevate the instrument or make it more artistic, by bringing it to a more sophisticated level of technique and repertoire based on European standards. Huntley may have been the first white performer to successfully transition from performing in blackface to being himself on stage, noted by the Boston Herald in November 1884. He was supported by another former blackface performer, Samuel Swaim Stewart, in his corporate magazine that popularized highly talented professionals. As the raucous imitations of plantation life decreased in minstrelsy, the banjo became more acceptable as an instrument of fashionable society, even to be accepted into women's parlors. Part of that change was a switch from the stroke style to the guitar playing style. An 1888 newspaper said, "All the maidens and a good many of the women also strum the instrument. Banjo classes abound on every side and banjo recitals are among the newest diversions of fashion. Youths and elderly men too have caught the fever. The star strummers among men are in demand at the smartest parties and have the choosing of the society of the most charming girls." Some of those entertainers, such as Alfred A. Farland, specialized in classical music. However, musicians who wanted to entertain their audiences and make a living mixed it in with the popular music that audiences wanted. Farland's pupil Frederick J. Bacon was one of these. A former medicine show entertainer, Bacon performed classical music and popular songs such as Masses in the Cold, Cold Ground, a medley of Scotch airs, a medley of Southern airs, and his own West Lawn polka. Banjo innovation, which began in the minstrel age, continued with increased use of metal parts, exotic wood, raised metal frets, and a tone ring that improved the sound. Instruments were designed in a variety of sizes and pitch ranges to play different parts in banjo orchestras. Examples on display in the museum include banjoreens and piccolo banjos. New styles of playing, a new look, instruments in a variety of pitch ranges to take the place of different sections in an orchestra, all helped separate the instrument from the rough minstrel image of the previous 50 to 60 years. The instrument was modern now, a bright new thing, with polished metal sides. In the early 1900s, new banjos began to spread, four-string models, played with a plectrum rather than with the minstrel banjo clawhammer stroke or the classic banjo fingerpicking style. The new banjos were a result of changing musical tastes. New music spurred the creation of evolutionary variations of the banjo, from the five-string model current since the 1830s to newer four-string plectrum and tenor banjos. The instruments became ornately decorated in the 1920s to be visually dynamic to a theater audience. The instruments were increasingly modified or made in a new style, necks that were shortened to handle the force steel, not fiber as before, strings that were sounded with a pick instead of fingers, four strings instead of five, and tuned differently. The changes reflected the nature of post-World War I music. The country turned away from European classics, preferring the upbeat and carefree feel of jazz, and American soldiers returning from the war helped to drive this change. However, the change in tastes toward dance music, and the need for louder instruments, began a few years before the war with ragtime. That music encouraged musicians to alter their five-string banjos to four, add the louder steel strings and use a pick or plectrum, all to be heard over the brass and reed instruments that were current in dance halls. The four-string plectrum and tenor banjos did not eliminate the five-string variety. They were products of their times and musical purposes, ragtime and jazz dance music and theater music. The Great Depression is a visible line to mark the end of the jazz age. The economic downturn cut into the sales of both four- and five-string banjos, and by World War II, banjos were in sharp decline, the market for them dead. In the post-World War II years, the banjo experienced a resurgence, played by music stars such as Earl Scruggs, bluegrass, Bela Fleck, jazz, rock, world music, Jerry O'Connor, Celtic and Irish music, Perry Bechtel, jazz, big band, Pete Seeger, folk, and Otis Taylor, African-American roots, blues, jazz. Pete Seeger was a major force behind a new national interest in folk music. Learning to play a fingerstyle in the Appalachians from musicians who never stopped playing the banjo, he wrote the book, How to Play the Five-String Banjo, the only banjo method on the market for years. He was followed by folk musicians, such as Dave Gard of the Kingston Trio, and Eric Darling of the Weavers and Terriers. Earl Scruggs was seen both as a legend and a contemporary musical innovator who gave his name to his style of playing, the Scruggs style. Scruggs played the banjo with heretofore unheard-of speed and dexterity, using a picking technique for the five-string banjo that he perfected from two-finger and three-finger picking techniques in rural North Carolina. His playing reached Americans through the Grand Ole Opry and into the living rooms of Americans who didn't listen to country or bluegrass music through the theme music of the Beverly Hillbillies. For the last 100 years, the tenor banjo has become an intrinsic part of the world of Irish traditional music. It is a relative newcomer to the genre. Two techniques closely associated with the five-string banjo are rolls and drones. Rolls are right-hand accompanimental fingering patterns that consist of 8/8 notes that subdivide each measure. Drone notes are quick little notes, typically 8/8 notes, usually played on the 5th, short, string to fill in around the melody notes, typically 8/8 notes. These techniques are both idiomatic to the banjo in all styles, and their sound is characteristic of bluegrass. Historically, the banjo was played in the clawhammer style by the Africans who brought their banjo version. Several other styles of play were developed from this. Clawhammer consists of downward striking of one or more of the four main strings with the index, middle, or both fingers, while the drone or fifth string is played with a lifting, as opposed to downward pluck, motion thumb. The notes typically sounded by the thumb in this fashion are, usually, on the off beat. Melodies can be pretty intricate, adding techniques such as double thumbing and drop thumb. In old-time Appalachian mountain music, a style called two-finger up pick is also used, and Earl Scruggs developed a three-finger version into the Scruggs. Style picking was nationally aired in 1945 on the Grand Ole Opry. While five-string banjos are traditionally played with either fingerpicks or the fingers themselves, tenor banjos and plectrum banjos are played with a pick, either to strum full chords or, most commonly in Irish traditional music, play single-note melodies. The modern banjo comes in a variety of forms, including four- and five-string versions. A six-string version, tuned and played similarly to a guitar, has gained popularity. In almost all of its forms, banjo playing is characterized by a fast arpeggiated plucking, though many different playing styles exist. The body, or pot, of a modern banjo typically consists of a circular rim, generally made of wood, though metal was also shared on older banjos, and a tensioned head, similar to a drum head. Traditionally, the head was made from animal skin, but today is often made of various synthetic materials. Most modern banjos also have a metal tone ring assembly that helps further clarify and project the sound, but many older banjos do not include a tone ring. The banjo is usually tuned with friction tuning pegs or planetary gear tuners rather than the worm gear machine head used on guitars. Frets have become standard since the late 19th century, though fretless banjos are still manufactured and played by those wishing to execute glissando, play quarter tones, or otherwise achieve the sound and feeling of early playing styles. Modern banjos are typically strung with metal strings. Usually, the fourth string is wound with either steel or bronze phosphor alloy. Some players may string their banjos with nylon or gut strings to achieve a more mellow, old-time tone. Some banjos have a separate resonator plate on the back of the pot to project the sound forward and give the instrument more volume. This type of banjo is usually used in bluegrass music, though resonator banjos are played by players of all styles and used in old time, sometimes as a substitute for electric amplification when playing in large venues. Open-back banjos generally have a mellower tone and weigh less than resonator banjos. They usually have a different setup than a resonator banjo, often with a higher string action. The modern five-string banjo is a variation of Sweeney's original design. The fifth string is usually the same gauge as the first but starts from the fifth fret, 3/4 the length of the other strings. This lets the string be tuned to a higher open pitch than possible for the full-length strings. Because of the short fifth string, the five-string banjo uses a re-entrant tuning. The string pitches do not proceed lowest to highest across the fingerboard. Instead, the fourth string is the lowest, third, second, first, and fifth is the highest. The short fifth string presents particular problems for a capo. For small changes, going up or down one or two semitones, for example, retuning the fifth string simply is possible. Otherwise, various devices called fifth string capos effectively shorten the vibrating part of the string. Many banjo players use model railroad spikes or titanium spikes, usually installed at the 7th fret and sometimes at others, under which they hook the string to press it down on the fret. 5-string banjo players use many tunings. Tunings are given in left-to-right order, as viewed from the instrument's front with the neck pointing up. Probably the most common, particularly in bluegrass, is the open G tuning G4 D3 G3 B3 D4. In earlier times, the tuning G4 C3 G3 B3 D4 was commonly used instead, and this is still the preferred tuning for some types of folk music and for classic banjo. Other tunings found in old-time music include double C, G4 C3 G3 C4 D4, sawmill, G4 D3 G3 C4 D4, also called mountain modal, and open D, F number 4 D3 F number 3 A3 D4. These tunings are often taken up a tone, either by tuning up or using a capo. For example, double D tuning, A4 D3 A3 D4 E4, commonly reached by tuning up from double C, is often played to accompany fiddle tunes in the key of D, and open A, A4 E3 A3 C sharp 4 E4, is usually used for playing tunes in the key of A. Dozens of other banjo tunings are used, mainly in old-time music. These tunings make playing specific tunes easier, usually fiddle tunes or groups of fiddle tunes. The size of the 5-string banjo is largely standardized, but smaller and larger sizes exist, including the long neck or Seeger neck variation designed by Pete Seeger. Petite variations on the 5-string banjo have been available since the 1890s. S.S. Stewart introduced the banjo in, tuned 1/4 above a standard 5-string. Piccolo banjos are smaller and tuned 1 octave above a standard banjo. Between these sizes and standard lies the A-scale banjo, 2 frets shorter and usually tuned 1 whole step above standard tunings. Many makers have produced banjos of other scale lengths and with various innovations. American old-time music typically uses the 5-string, open-back banjo. It is played in several different styles, the most common being clawhammer or frailing, characterized by a downward rather than upward stroke when striking the strings with a fingernail. Frailing techniques use the thumb to catch the fifth string for a drone after most strums or after each stroke, double thumbing, or pick out additional melody notes in what is known as drop thumb. Pete Seeger popularized a folk style by combining clawhammer with up-picking, usually without finger picks. Another typical style of old-time banjo playing is finger-picking banjo or classic banjo. This style is based upon the parlor-style guitar. Bluegrass music, which uses the 5-string resonator banjo almost exclusively, is played in several standard styles. These include Scruggs style, named after Earl Scruggs, melodic, or Keith style, named for Bill Keith, and 3-finger style with single string work, also called Reno style after Don Reno. In these styles, the emphasis is on arpeggiated figures played in a continuous 8th-note rhythm, known as rolls. All of these styles are typically played with finger picks. The first 5-string, electric, the solid body banjo was developed by Charles Wilburn, Buck, Trent, Harold Schott Jackson, and David Jackson in 1960. The five-string banjo has been used in classical music since before the turn of the 20th century. Contemporary and modern works have been written or arranged for the instrument by Jerry Garcia, Buck Trent, Bela Fleck, Tony Trischka, Ralph Stanley, Steve Martin, George Crumb, Modest Mouse, Joe Kondo, Paul Elwood, Hans-Werner Henze, notably in his Sixth Symphony, Daniel Mason of Hank Williams III as Dam Band, Beck, the Water Tower Bucket Boys, Todd Taylor, J.P. Pickens, Peggy Honeywell, Norfolk, and Weston, Putnam Smith, Iron, and Wine, the Avett Brothers, the Well Pennies, Punch Brothers, Julian Costa, Sufjan Stevens, Sarah Yarosh and sisters Leah Song and Chloe Smith from Rising Appalachia. Frederick Delius wrote for a banjo in his opera Konga. Ernst Krenek includes two banjos in his Kleiner Symphony, Little Symphony. Kurt Weill has a banjo in his opera The Rise and Fall of the City of Mahogany. Victor Ullmann included a tenor banjo part in his Piano Concerto, Opus 25. The four-string plectrum banjo is a standard banjo without the short drone string. It usually has 22 frets on the neck and a scale length of 26 to 28 inches and was initially tuned C3G3B3D4. It can also be tuned like the top four strings of a guitar, known as Chicago tuning. As the name suggests, it is usually played with a guitar-style pick, that is, a single one held between thumb and forefinger, unlike the five-string banjo, which is either played with a thumb pick and two finger picks or with bare fingers. The plectrum banjo evolved out of the five-string banjo to cater to styles of music involving strummed chords. The plectrum is also featured in many early jazz recordings and arrangements. Four-string banjos can be used for chordal accompaniment, as in early jazz, for single-string melody playing, as in Irish traditional music, in chord melody style, a succession of chords in which the highest notes carry the melody, in tremolo style, both on chords and single strings, and a mixed technique called duo style that combines single-string tremolo and rhythm chords. Four-string banjos are used from time to time in musical theatre. Examples include Hello, Dolly, Mame, Chicago, Cabaret Oklahoma, Half a Sixpence, Annie, Barnum, The Threepenny Opera, Monty Python's Camelot, and countless others. Joe Raposo had used it variably in the imaginative seven-piece orchestration for the long-running TV show Sesame Street, and has sometimes had it overdubbed with itself or an electric guitar. The banjo is still, albeit rarely, in use in the show's arrangement currently. The shorter-necked tenor banjo, with 17, short scale, or 19 frets, is typically played with a plectrum. It became a popular instrument after about 1910. Early models used for melodic picking typically had 17 frets on the neck and a scale length of 191 halves to 211 halves inches. By the mid-1920s, when the instrument was used primarily for strummed chordal accompaniment, 19 fret necks with a scale length of 213 fourths to 23 inches became standard. The usual tuning is the all-fifths tuning C3G3D4A4, in which exactly seven semitones, a perfect fifth, occur between the open notes of consecutive strings. This is identical to the tuning of a viola. Other players, particularly in Irish traditional music, tune the banjo G2D3A3E4 like an octave mandolin, which lets the banjoist duplicate fiddle and mandolin fingering. The popularization of this tuning is usually attributed to the late Barney McKenna, banjoist with the Dubliners. Fingerstyle on tenor banjo retuned to open G tuning D G D G or lower open D tuning a dad, three finger picking, frailing, has been explored by Mirek Patek. The tenor banjo was a common rhythm instrument in early 20th century dance bands. Its volume and timbre suited early jazz, and jazz-influenced popular music styles, and could compete with other instruments, such as brass instruments and saxophones, and be heard clearly on acoustic recordings. Inferred Groffé's original jazz orchestra arrangement, George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, includes tenor banjo, with widely spaced chords not easily playable on plectrum banjo in its conventional tunings. With the archtop and electric guitar development, the tenor banjo largely disappeared from jazz and popular music, though keeping its place in traditional Dixieland jazz. Some 1920s Irish banjo players picked out the melodies of jigs, reels, and hornpipes on tenor banjos, decorating the tunes with snappy triplet ornaments. The most important Irish banjo player of this era was Mike Flanagan of the New York-based Flanagan Brothers, one of the most popular Irish-American groups of the day. Other pre-World War II Irish banjo players included Neil Nolan, who recorded with Dan Sullivan's Shamrock Band in Boston, and Jimmy McDade, who recorded with the Four Provinces Orchestra in Philadelphia. Meanwhile, in Ireland, the rise of Seely bands provided a new market for a loud instrument like the tenor banjo. The use of the tenor banjo in Irish music has increased greatly since the folk revival of the 1960s. The six banjo began as a British innovation by William Temlett, one of England's earliest banjo makers. He opened a shop in London in 1846 and sold seven-string banjos, which he marketed as zither banjos from his 1869 patent. A zither banjo usually has a closed back and sides with the drum body and skin tensioning system suspended inside the wooden rim, the neck and string tailpiece mounted on the outside of the rim, and the drone string led through a tube in the neck so that the tuning peg can be mounted on the head. They were often made by builders who used guitar tuners that came in banks of three, so five-stringed instruments had a redundant tuner. These banjos could be somewhat easily converted over to a six-string banjo. American Alfred Davis Kamea, 1862-1949, a young violinist turned concert banjo player, devised the six-string zither banjo around 1880. British opera diva Adelina Patti advised Kamea that the zither banjo might be popular with English audiences as it had been invented there, and Kamea went to London in 1888. His virtuoso playing helped show that banjos could make more sophisticated music than normally played by blackface minstrels. He was soon performing for London society, where he met Sir Arthur Sullivan, who recommended that Kamea progress from arranging the music of others for banjo to composing his own music. Modern six-string bluegrass banjos have been made. These add a bass string between the lowest string and the drone string on a five-string banjo, and are usually tuned G4, G2, D3, G3, B3, D4. Sonny Osborne played one of these instruments for several years. It was modified by luthier Ruel Yarborough from a Vega five-string model. A picture of Sonny with this banjo appears in Pete Wernick's Bluegrass Banjo Method book. Six-string banjos, known as banjo guitars, consist of a six-string guitar neck attached to a bluegrass or plectrum banjo body, allowing players who have learned the guitar to play a banjo sound without having to relearn fingerings. This was the instrument of the early jazz great Johnny St. Cyr, jazzmen Django Reinhardt, Danny Barker, Papa Charlie Jackson, and Clancy Hayes, and the blues and gospel singer Reverend Gary Davis. Today, musicians as diverse as Keith Urban, Rod Stewart, Taj Mahal, Joe Satriani, David Hidalgo, Larry Lalonde, and Doc Watson play the six-string guitar banjo. They have become increasingly popular since the mid-1990s. In the late 19th and early 20th centuries, in vogue in plucked string instrument ensembles, guitar orchestras, mandolin orchestras, banjo orchestras, was when the instrumentation was made to parallel that of the string section in symphony orchestras. Thus, violin, viola, cello, bass became mandolin, mandola, mandocello, mandibus, or in the case of banjos, banjolin, banjola, banjocello, bass banjo. Because the range of plucked stringed instruments generally is not as great as that of comparably sized bowed string instruments, other instruments were often added to these plucked orchestras to extend the range of the ensemble upwards and downwards. The banjo-cello was normally tuned C2G2D3A3, one octave below the tenor banjo like the cello and mandocello. A five-string cello banjo, set up like a bluegrass banjo, with the short fifth string, but tuned one octave lower, has been produced by the Goldtone Company. Bass banjos have been produced in both upright bass formats and with standard, horizontally carried banjo bodies. Contrabass banjos with three or four strings have also been made. Some of these had headstocks similar to those of bass violins. The tuning varies on these large instruments, with four-string models sometimes being tuned in fourths like a bass violin, E1A1D2G2, and sometimes in fifths, like a four-string cello banjo, one octave lower, C1G1D2A2. Several hybrid instruments exist, crossing the banjo with other stringed instruments. Most of these use the body of a banjo, often with a resonator and the neck of the other instrument. Examples include the banjo mandolin, first patented in 1882, and the banjo ukulele, most famously played by the English comedian George Formby. These were especially popular in the early decades of the 20th century and were probably a result of a desire either to allow players of other instruments to jump on the banjo bandwagon at the height of its popularity or to get the natural amplification benefits of the banjo resonator in an age before electric amplification. Conversely, the tenor and plectrum guitars use the respective banjo necks on guitar bodies. They arose in the early 20th century as a way for banjo players to double on guitar without relearning the instrument entirely. Instruments with a five-string banjo neck on a wooden body, for example, a guitar, bouzouki, or dobro body, have also been made, such as the banjola. A 20th century Turkish instrument similar to the banjo is called the kumbus, which combines a banjo-like resonator with a neck derived from an oud. At the end of the 20th century, a development of the five-string banjo was the ban sitar. This features a bone bridge, giving the instrument a sitar-like resonance. The Brazilian samba banjo is basically a cavaquinho neck on a banjo body, producing a louder sound than the cavaquinho. It's tuned the same as the top four strings of a five-string banjo up an octave, or any cavaquinho tuning, but it's louder due to the banjo body acting like a really loud amp.